Now, the book of Micah is not generally well known, even among Christians. But Micah chapter 5 is very well known by Christians and non-Christians, even though they may not know that they know much about Micah chapter 5. And the reason for that is that often Micah chapter 5 or portions of Micah chapter 5 are quoted when Matthew chapter 2 is being read during the Advent and Christmas season. In Matthew chapter 2, we have the story of the Magi looking for Messiah. They finally make it to the city of Jerusalem. When King Herod hears about it, he has no idea what is going on. And so he calls together the chief priests and the teachers of the law, and he asks them, where will Messiah, the Christ, the anointed one, be born? And they immediately reply, in Bethlehem, Judea. And then they quote from portions of Micah chapter 5. Well, Micah chapter 5 tells us at least three significant things about Messiah that I'd like us to look at and consider this morning. First of all, it has to do with location. Hundreds of years before it happened, the location of the birthplace of Messiah was predicted. Micah chapter 5, verse 2, but you, Bethlehem, Ephrathah, though you are small among the clans of Judah, out of you will come for me one who will be ruler over Israel. Now, Bethlehem, Ephrathah is about 5 miles south-southwest of Jerusalem, not to be confused with Bethlehem to the north of Jerusalem in the territory of Zebulun. Bethlehem Ephrathah was of the smallest clans in Judah, and it was small both in size and in significance. For you see, Micah did not even use the regular word for little or small. He chose a word rarely used that actually means trifling or insignificant. And in fact, it was so trifling and so insignificant that way back in Joshua chapter 15 and in Nehemiah chapter 11, when they're listing all of the towns of the clans of Judah, Bethlehem Ephrathah never even made the list. Trifling, insignificant, small. And yet out of this little town, deliverance came from this least expected place. Out of seeming weakness, King David's greatest descendant, the Messiah, was born. The Apostle Paul captured this concept when he wrote to the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 27 and 29. But God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong. He chose the lowly things of this world and the despised things and the things that are not to nullify the things that are, so that no one may boast before him. Location. A second significant thing that Micah points out about Messiah has to do with origin. Origin. The last part of Micah 5, verse 2, whose origins are from of old, from ancient times. The Hebrew in which this was originally written means literally days of immeasurable time. Days of immeasurable time. The footnote in my Bible says, or from days of eternity. The King James Version legitimately translates it from everlasting. And this is consistent with many other verses that speak about Messiah being eternal. John chapter 1, for example, which, by the way, Mitchell Mickey is going to be preaching from the first Sunday in December. Here at Heritage, John chapter 1, verse 1 says, in the beginning was the Word, referring to Jesus, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Colossians 1, verse 17, Jesus is before all things, and in him all things hold together. In Revelation chapter 1, verse 8, Jesus said, I am the Alpha and the Omega, who is and who was and who is to come. In Revelation chapter 1, verses 17 and 18, again, Jesus speaking, I am the first and the last. I am the living one. I was dead, and behold, I am alive forever and ever. We all know that human kings and human kingdoms come and go. It will not be this way with Jesus. His kingdom will be forever. Way back in 2 Samuel chapter 7, verse 16, God had promised King David, your house and your kingdom will endure forever before me. Your throne will be established forever. And as you read the passage, you see that David understood that an eternal kingdom required an eternal king. And Micah tells us that is precisely who Messiah is, an eternal ruler whose origins are from of old, from days of eternity, from everlasting. So location, origin. A third significant thing that Micah points out about Messiah has to do with his function. His function. Micah chapter 5, verse 4, he will stand and shepherd his flock in the strength of the Lord, in the majesty of the name of the Lord his God. And they will live securely, for then his greatness will reach to the ends of the earth. Micah introduces a beautiful image here, saying that the Lord would indeed rule over his people, but not as a terrible tyrant, not as a cruel dictator, but rather as a loving shepherd who would keep careful watch over his flock. As their shepherd, the Lord would lead them and feed them. He would protect them and provide for them. In other words, the Lord, our shepherd, will take very good care of us. And of course, this theme of the Lord being our shepherd can be found throughout the scriptures. Psalm 23 immediately comes to mind. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. Psalm 100, verse 3, know that the Lord is God. It is he who made us, and we are his. We are his people, the sheep of his pasture. Isaiah 40, verse 11, is a great verse. It says, he tends his flock like a shepherd. He gathers the lambs in his arms and carries them close to his heart. Isn't that great? He carries them close to his heart. Other significant Old Testament passages that speak about the Lord being our shepherd include Jeremiah 23, Ezekiel 34, and Zechariah chapter 10. And this wonderful shepherd will be so great that his rule will be universal. Last part of verse 4, they will live securely, for then his greatness will reach to the ends of the earth. Now, after considering the location of the birth of Messiah, the origin of Messiah from everlasting, and the function of Messiah as our shepherd, when will this wonderful Messiah shepherd come in the strength of the Lord? In the majesty of the name of the Lord his God. When will his rule reach to the ends of the earth? When will that happen? During the millennial reign, the millennial kingdom, when Christ will rule on earth for 1,000 years. Now, I have told you before that I am a pre-trib, pre-mill person. What that means is that my understanding of Scripture is that there will be a pre-tribulation rapture of the church where we will be caught up together with the Lord to meet Him in the air. A pre-tribulation rapture that could occur at any moment. And after the rapture of the church, I believe there will be then a 7-year span of time known as the tribulation. Near the end of the tribulation will be what has been termed the Battle of Armageddon. And Jesus will return to earth. That is the second coming of Christ. He will defeat His enemies, be received finally by the Jews as the Messiah, and then establish His 1,000-year millennial reign on earth. At the end of that 1,000 millennial reign, Satan will be released from his prison and be soundly defeated and forever consigned to the lake of fire forever. And then the new heavens and the new earth will be ushered in for all of eternity. So there you have it in a very brief nutshell of good pre-trib, pre-mill eschatology or understanding of the end times. Now, I know that different people have different opinions about what will transpire in the last days. I know there are people in our congregation who have different opinions about this than I do. They have told me so. Instead of being thinking of a pre-trib rapture, some think it'll be mid-trib, halfway through the tribulation. Others post-trib, after the tribulation. Instead of being pre-millennial in our understanding of the second coming of Christ to establish that millennial reign, there are some who think it'll take place after that 1,000-year reign. It'll be post-millennial. There are some who are amillennial, which means they do not think there will be that 1,000-year reign at all. And so if you are here this morning and you currently hold a different position than I do, instead of being pre-trib and pre-mill in your eschatology, if you hold a different position, perhaps the best thing for you to do would be to simply admit that you are wrong and I am right. I think that would be the simplest. And then we could just move on. Or as Jerry Durston is famous for saying, if you have a different view of the end times than he does, you can apologize to him when you get to heaven. Just kidding. Regardless of your understanding of the end times and how everything is going to sequentially unfold, I think the encouraging thing for all of us is that we do have something truly wonderful to look forward to. One day, Jesus will return. We can all agree on that. One day, the forces of evil will be finally conquered. One day, Satan and all of his demons will be soundly defeated. One day, wrongs will be made right. God, in all of His glory, will reign. In the end, we all know that God wins. And that, my friends, is something to look forward to, something to celebrate. But on top of all that, in the meantime, we can be encouraged knowing that Jesus, our Messiah shepherd, is already leading and feeding us. He is already protecting and providing for us. We do not have to wait until the end times to begin to benefit from His loving involvement in our lives right now. And so with that in mind, let us turn our thoughts to the communion table. Over in the Gospel of John, chapter 10. Jesus said in verse 11, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. And that is what we celebrate. That is what we commemorate. That is what we remember when we observe communion. He goes on in verse 14 of John chapter 10. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. The reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down and authority to take it up again. This command I received from my Father.